I started out the book wanting to tell some stories about the trials and tribulations of stand-up comedy, kind of where I came from, and it ended up being kind of an inspirational book of kind of always being a hard worker and being patient and never giving up.
At the top of the show, you heard Sebastian Maniscalco on his 2018 biography, Stay Hungry. Sebastian stars in the Golden Globe-nominated film Green Book, currently in theaters, and in the role of Joseph Crazy Joe Gallo in Martin Scorsese's The Irishman. The film is set to be released on Netflix later this year and stars Robert De Niro, Al Pacino, and Joe Pesci. You can catch his new one-hour stand-up special, Stay Hungry, this Tuesday, January 15th. Also on Netflix. I'm Gregory Day. This is PDXPodcast.com. We're also going to be chatting with comedian John Rickenbacker Jr. today. He stars in season 3 of Crashing on HBO. More from Sebastian now as he tells us about his early days in Los Angeles, pushing to get stage time at the Comedy Store.
So I came to Los Angeles in 1998 and I wanted to get into the Comedy Store, which is kind of like the mecca of stand-up comedy in the world. It's where Mitzi Shore kind of cultivated a lot of the great comedians that that you see today, primarily in the 80s. And when I went there, I in order to get a showcase in front of Mitzi Shore, you had to be recommended by a paid regular, and Michael Wheels Parisi was the guy that kind of put me in front of Mitzi and kind of stuck his neck out for me. And got me in there, which, again, was one of those moments where the Comedy Store has been my kind of gymnasium to work out material. And I was just there last night. I'll be there again tonight working out some new stuff. So for whatever the reason, that Comedy Store, that original room for me is just, I feel at home. I feel comfortable. I feel creatively open to kind of say and do what I want. And thank God I have the Comedy Store, because there's definitely, I would not be where I am today if it wasn't for that place. For me, you know, trying to look for a job to supplement my income while I started stand-up comedy in Los Angeles in 1998, you know, it was difficult to find work out here, and I remember just waiting at the Four Seasons in the lobby and waiting for this interview, and I'm like, forget this guy's making me wait a half hour or whatever it was, and I decided to kind of sit there and when he came out, we hit it off, and next thing you know, I had a job, and I was at least secured in my finances while I pursued this thing. And who knows? I mean, if that wouldn't have happened, I don't know where I would be. But, you know, I believe things happen for a reason in life, and sometimes those split decisions could really make a difference.
No, I could totally tell by the way you delivered that line in the audiobook that that was such an important moment.
It was. There's some moments in the book where, you know, I just kind of explain all the different jobs that I've ever had. I was Captain Morgan for a while, bouncing around nightclubs, passing out shots dressed as Captain Morgan. I was at Owen Mills Portrait Studio, I was at the Olive Garden, all these different things.
Right. I was really impressed that you still remembered the song. Now, Wheels, that sounds like a guy that hangs out with Dice Clay. It just sounds like it.
His name was Wheels because he was so fast on his feet. He could, like, really, really come up with stuff really quickly. And he opened up for Dice for a while. He introduced me to Dice Clay. And then subsequently, I opened up for Dice for a couple of years. So
right.
My feet wet with theaters, larger audiences, and all that.
And you close the book by talking about your family. It's very touching. Nice way to end it.
Thanks. Yeah, my family's been a big part of what I do, and especially my father, and talking about him his, you know, growing up in Sicily and coming here to the States when he was 15. He kind of brought that old world, old school value system here, and I talk a lot about it on stage, and I think people could relate to having an overbearing father.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking the time. And wonderful book. Wonderful book. It's not just about comedy, this book. This book is about working hard, getting it done.
You got it. And I appreciate you having me on, and have a happy new year.
I appreciate it. Cheers.
You got it. Bye-bye.
Hello, hello.
Hey, Greg. What's up, man?
Hey, how you doing? This is John. Wow, great to connect with you. This is very exciting.
Yes, definitely. Same here.
I just watched a video of you beatboxing. That was very interesting. You're a great beatboxer.
Yeah, that was actually before I started comedy. I was a beatboxer. Not like professionally. I had a few battles early on, but like right when I got good at it, I made the transition into comedy.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about the Church of Laugh? What is this organization? Is it a comedy troupe or is it a touring group?
It's both.
Yeah.
It actually started as just like church social media comedy with memes and such and videos, funny stuff that happens in church, in church culture, church humor. Right. But the creator, Jeremy Williams, excuse me, I'm a little under weather. Jeremy Williams, he created, his goal was to have a sketch comedy show, which brings church culture with pop culture and brings it together. So it's pretty much the Bible nowadays. So it's you know, just poking fun at the different Bible stories and making it relevant to what's going on in society.
Is it non-denominational?
Yes, it's non-denominational. We poke fun out of everything, every denomination. And
Pentecostals, there's a lot to dig in there. There's a lot to make fun of.
Oh, yeah.
The Baptists, Southern Baptists.
And not only with denominations, also with just the Bible stories in general. Like, there's a lot of crazy stories that we found from just reading and coming up with different things. Like, with David killed his friend so he can sleep with his wife, and it's like, you know, it's like just different things like that,
oh boy.
And like being able, you know, that stuff that happens, we hear about those things on TV, on the news, everything like that. So it's actually pretty dope to actually create a pop culture through Bible stories. And we've toured, we've gone to Detroit, Chicago, LA. We tour all over New York. We just came back from St. Croix not too long ago. Mm-hmm. And so it's actually taken off pretty well. It's like the Christian version of In Living Color.
That is fantastic. That is fantastic.
Yeah.
A lot of my family are involved with the church. I said the Nazarenes too. There's a lot to have a laugh at there. They call you Fudge, funny, unique, devoted gentleman, entertainer, and that's your moniker. How did you come up with that, Fudge?
Before I became a comedian, this was probably like my junior year of high school. And we were doing a battle of the buses because we were on this college tour and I wanted to do comedy. And back then, the comedians that I followed on Def Comedy Jam had food names. So I was a little heavier.
Yeah.
And so there was a comedian by the name of Chocolate. She goes by her real name, Chanita Morris now, big sister of mine, one of my mentors. And I couldn't go by Chocolate because she had that name at the time. And then Puddin was another name that I thought of, and I was like, that's a little bit too soft for a comedy name. And so I came up with Fudge, and this is a joke that I still use to this day about I had to make Fudge mean something because, you know, I couldn't be a black man named Fudge without an explanation, especially where I'm from, you know.
It's wonderful. You've got some great credits too, BET, Apollo Live, MTV, Yo Mama.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the thing about Apollo Live, it was a pilot. Like, I did two different ones. It was Showtime at the Apollo, which aired probably like 2010 in December. Mm-hmm. It was like just like an amateur night. And Apollo Live, where they were actually going to use it for BET. It was a pilot episode. I don't know if it ever aired, but, you know, that was something that I did, and got to work with Tony Rock on that. As far as the Yo Mama thing, they came to New York. It was their second season, and MTV came, and I got to work with Wilma Valderrama. And he pretty much, they saw him. I did a few jokes. I wasn't even like that type of guy. Like, I didn't know I had that in me, that right. battle comedy that, right, you know, right. to roast people and talk about people, because I started in church.
Yeah.
So I kind of, you know, just, I actually, the funny thing about that story was I wasn't even originally going to audition for it. I actually got the information from my friend who I went to school with him, and I knew that he was good at snapping on people or dissing people. Mm-hmm. And so what ended up happening at the last minute, he canceled. I had this confirmation, so I went instead and prepared a few jokes, and they liked me. So that actually helped. And that's got my first, you know, shot on television.
Now, how were the crowds at Apollo Live?
The thing about Apollo, because being from New York, Apollo was just like an every Saturday thing. It was something that used to come on all the time. They had multiple hosts like Steve Harvey, Monique, Mark Curry, I think, hosted it at one point. And it pretty much was a staple of, you know, you have some talent. Like, you, even if you didn't win, as long as you had a great showing, mm-hmm. you can build upon it. Even if you didn't do well, you know, people, you know, you can learn from your mistakes and build from it. The Apollo crowd in Harlem, New York, they're very, very unforgiving.
Yes.
If they don't like you, they won't give you a shot.
So, well, they're famous for that. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it was this big mistake, because looking on television, you think it's like as big as Madison Square Garden. But then when you get there, it looks like the Muppet Show. It's like it's really small in there. And it's, you know, and then I learned, like, all right, well, it's not that bad. So as long as I come out there and hit them hard,
right.
I'll have nothing to worry about. And that was part of the beatboxing. Excuse me. That was part of the beatboxing. I actually did that, a joke about DJs in churches. And it was based off a joke that actually happened where I went to a church and they had a DJ in the church. And so mixing with my beatboxing skills, I was able to, you know, do that joke, and it went over well, especially in Harlem. So I had a very good showing on television. Unfortunately, I didn't win that particular episode, because you can't really beat singers on Apollo. But yeah. I did well, and I can say that I did well on television on Apollo.
Wow, wow. What an accomplishment. That must have been just an amazing feeling.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely.
They're known for being a tough crowd, and if you can win them over, if you can make it there, I think, you know, you can make it anywhere. Now, I also saw a photo of you with Steve Harvey. Was that an interview?
Yes, it was actually, it was a very pivotal moment in my life.
This was an Instagram image that you posted, right?
I was actually, I'm a four-time Gospel Fest winner and the first time the comedy winner. And I was able to perform on such stages as the Prudential Center, Madison Square Garden, Hammerstein Ballroom, a lot of these big venues early in my career, just based off of, because that's where they showed, you know, the Gospel Fest competition was. And right. this particular year, because I won so many times, they were like, all right, let's give you a break. And so I had the opportunity with this group called Sound Booth Inc., mm-hmm. Sound Booth TV.
Yeah.
And they allowed me to do some corresponding backstage, and I got to meet actor Terry Crews and his family, different artists, and one particular artist that I got to meet was Steve Harvey. And the first thing he did was adjust my tie. We both had polka dot ties on, and I got to talk with him because he was the host for that year, and I actually was supposed to perform that year as, you know, like that was supposed to be my coming out party, but due to time constraints, I wasn't able to go on, which was unfortunate, but just the consultation, you know, the consolation was me being able to sit with Steve Harvey for a little bit, and I got to talk to him about his mom, because it was Mother's Day, and his mother never got to see him do comedy. And and I asked him a question, and he started crying because of, you know, he never thought he would be at that moment where he would work clean. And that was around the transition when he started, you know, to do the game shows and stuff like that. So it was definitely very big to trigger that emotion. And he told me, which I still hold true to this day, he said, since you're a comic, he said, what's your comedy name? I told him. And he was like, you have to hear your name about, I think he used 4,000 times. And once you hear your name called 4,000 times, you made it. And so then he was like, coming to the stage, Fuzz. And he said, now you got to hear your name 3,999 more times. and so that right there showed me, like, all right, cool. I think I have the ability. I know I have the ability to transcend where I'm at right now and even go above where I even see myself right now.
Wow. Is he a deeply religious man, Steve?
Yes. But the thing about it is, too, with a lot of the comics that I've noticed, and Pete probably could tell you, too, that a lot of comics aren't open with their faith because they came in a game a certain way.
Right.
And they don't want to change based off of they think their crowd will, you know, leave. And I've had many conversations with comedians about that. And when it comes to faith and comedy, I consider myself a Christian crossover comedian. And meaning I started in church and made the transition into comedy clubs to be a well-rounded comedian. What they tend to do is they'll call, you know, comedy as a whole secular, and then church comedy, you know, separate, Christian church comedy.
Yeah.
But my brand of comedy goes to everything. And that's why I feel like that's where the ministry aspect comes in, too, because you're able to meet people where they are and not come to a spirit of, oh, I'm above you, or I believe this, or I'm better than you, or my jokes are funnier because I'm talking about God. No, it's about, you know, being something that gives people substance as well as making them laugh. Because at the end of the day, we're all ministers in that aspect as far as, you know, bringing joy to people. So regardless of what style that is, as long as you're making someone happy, then you're doing your part. You know, it doesn't matter if you're a little more risque than others. It is what it is. That's your story. So, you know, that's why I don't ever judge people as far as style. It's an art.
Well, I tell you, I'm a big fan of the Fudge Shuffle. I get a kick out of that every time I see that on your Instagram page. We're talking a lot about Instagram. That's actually how we connected. And I'm a big fan of your posts. I really enjoy your posts. Always make me laugh. Now, okay, you were starring on the Good Faith Variety Tour with Pete Holmes on Crashing Season 3. Can you tell us about this experience of working on a big HBO show? Very exciting.
Well, this is my first television role as far as being a character. It was an awesome experience. Originally, and I don't know if they spoke about this, but originally the person's name was Sandy, was the original part that I read for. But right before we taped, Pete and I had a conversation. He pulled me to the side and asked me, you know, a little bit about myself and my name. And he was just like, we're just going to call you Fudge. And I was like, oh, okay. So this wasn't even planned. Like, even in my audition, I wrote as if my name was Sandy. And at the last second, Pete, you know, called the audible. And, you know, from there, we, and I'm sure you watched it, and people will watch at home when the time comes. Like, we developed a relationship right then and there. So it's supposed to take place over a time period. But, you know, during the few days that we've, that we taped, Pete was just so receptive and wanted my input and asked if, you know, he wanted to make sure that I was comfortable with things. And he didn't have to, because he was the executive producer. This is his show. He could have just been like, do this and that's it. Like, he actually cared about Christian comedy and it being seen in a good light, despite you know, what he may believe at this moment, he just made sure that people understood where he came from.
Right. You guys had a really nice tour bus.
Mm-hmm.
Like, super nice.
Yeah, that was the first for me, man. At, like, I don't know how they got that bus in that building, but it was just amazing to this experience, you know, something to that magnitude, especially learning from someone such as Pete, because just his comic timing, his ability, how he writes, how he prepares, you know, just different things, wearing many hats but still having to produce at the end of the day. Like, he showed me a lot, and he was very sharing. He open with his you know, just with his information and feedback. He gave me pointers, different things that'll help translate better on camera. And just everybody was just so awesome. Like, everybody on the set of Crashing was awesome, from the PA all the way to the catering to, you know, the guy that called cut. Everybody was just so nice. Like, it was awesome. It was such an awesome experience. I know every set is not like that, but, I mean, I'm glad that was my first experience.
Right. Now, I heard the set was actually pretty loose at times. I mean, they'd give you room to ad-lib and sort of make suggestions. That was your experience?
Yes. I unfortunately didn't get a chance to work with Judd Apatow, but I know just his stamp as far as that freedom to allow stuff to just organically happen helped a lot. And that was, and Gillian, who was the director of our episodes, she was definitely, she was encouraging and just helped me do different takes and different tries and trusting me with my input, you know, pull me back if I went too far, or, you know, push me to if they wanted more out of me. And it was just fun. It was just an overall loose set. You know, they were patient. They were very, it was just awesome. I just, like, again, I don't know if every set is going to be like that in my future, but definitely that was an awesome experience that I will never forget. And I still, to this day, keep in contact with a lot of people from the set, whether we work together again or not. You know, I feel like I made friends for life.
Today's show was produced and edited by Gregory Day. That's me. If you'd like to contact me directly, you can reach me at greg@pdxpodcast.com. We'll be back very shortly. See you then.